Welcome to the Elemental Awakening.
Guys, welcome to the Elemental Awakening. This episode, I'm with another awesome guest. His name is Shane Tyler Milson.
Three names.
We met in Toronto a few years ago, and I was just blown away by the knowledge and the passion that this man had for fungus. Yeah, some specific kinds, and we're going to get into that today and talk a bit about his journey into mushrooms. So, welcome to the show.
Good to be here, man. And it's kind of a full circle, too, because your events, when you were hosting the consciousness events, was actually my first chance to really demonstrate the product and show it.
Cool.
So you gave me really an intro to that world.
Ah, and right now, what are we drinking here? This is a...
It's a Chaga root beer with some sparkling water. The classic, the OG.
Brings me right back. Oh, Robbie's dying for...
You can have my pink glass, Robbie, if you need.
You can share some of mine. It's in there,
sneak
right?
in when you need it, yeah.
So, okay, so I guess I always like to start the podcast with a bit of a backstory. What led you into your company, which is Black Magic Alchemy?
Mm-hmm.
What got you into mushrooms? What's that process was like? Tell me about it.
The first opening for me with mushrooms was actually when I was a teenager. My grandfather's a farm in Uxbridge, and my grandfather was born in a cave in Italy during World War II. He moved to Canada, and he wanted to take that little piece of heritage with him. So he's always kept and retained this hobby of mushroom hunting. So I would go live with him on his farm in Uxbridge. He's got like a hobby farm, 50, 60 cows, a bunch of chickens, you know, the classic farm scenario. So I would go work with him on the summer when I was a teenager. I'd be doing all the farm labor with him, and he would take me out in the evenings to go hunt morels, chanterelles, chicken of the woods, all these amazing culinary mushrooms. And that was an activity I fell deeply in love with. This is at a time when, right when cell phones and video games started to become more popularized, but I still had that nice little piece of like being out in the woods and experiencing that thrill of going mushroom hunting. And also that ancestral pass down of knowledge of what's edible in the forest and what can you eat? And that empowerment I felt from actually knowing I could be self-sufficient if I was in the woods, like I would understand.
And because of that, it just reminds me that I definitely need to come on a hunt with you, because I've seen
videos. 100%.
I've seen Dan. I need you to take me out and really just show me the lay of the land and what I can eat and what I can't eat. So I'm looking forward to that. So I got it on camera.
Exactly. It's confirmed. Okay, yeah.
Confirmed. shaking on it. And also just saying that, like hearing you say that, something I want to make sure my kids have access to, because
right.
I don't know if it was in The Matrix, I've been watching it recently, or we're the last generation that knows what life is like before the internet.
Exactly.
And like that would just like hit me. It's like, whoa, like kids born into the internet age have no idea what it's like to be
right.
disconnected from that. And so like I want to try to bring some balance into my own life and also my kids, and like show them like how much fun it can be to be in nature. And I remember as a kid also like going in the forest and finding beaver dams and trying to break them down, and the next day we'd come and be built up again. We couldn't figure out how they did it. a lot of
yeah.
fun just being in nature and just exploring and,
right.
and having fun. So okay, so that's where the whole story begins.
Yeah.
And then what happened from there?
Yeah, so what actually happened from there is it's pretty much along the lines of where you're going with that is I had an early taste of what it was like to really unlock that imagination and go into the forest and start to see the forest as edible. I started being able to know what trees you would take thuja if you were in the winter in Canada as your vitamin C source. That's what Native Americans would actually brew it into a tea. That would be their vitamin C, although they wouldn't call it
that. Are those
like
the ends of some like a pine tree?
Yeah, it's a hardwood tree, and it's actually pretty prevalent. It's all around, and there's like a story of when the settlers first came. In the winter, they're all getting scurvy because they have no vitamin C. And they didn't know what to do. And Native Americans found them dying and realized, oh, they're supposed to drink these type of ferns off these type of trees and this type of hardwood and this type of pine. And it heals it completely. And they're literally camped out beside it, not knowing that that's actually the healing thing they require.
It's like right there.
It's right there in front of them. The backyard. Wow.
Look up, Robbie.
Giant hawk.
Sweet.
Nature's magical. So...
So they're dying.
They're dying.
The answer's right there. They just don't know how to access it.
Cure's often pretty close to the poison. So for me, I got that taste of mushroom hunting when I was a teenager, but it wasn't for another 7 years before it actually unlocked. And I got really deeply into health foods many years later. And I started learning about superfoods. I worked with some really prevalent superfood companies in Canada. And I started getting exposed to medicinal mushrooms, which if you look at it, there would be psychedelic mushrooms, poisonous mushrooms, culinary mushrooms, medicinal mushrooms. You could divide it into those four categories. I started learning about medicinal mushrooms like Chaga and Reishi and lion's mane and cordyceps, and started becoming so fascinated by the stories of what people were experiencing, the testimonies of people who had been drinking things like shaga tea and being able to not lose their hair during chemo or lose all their weight. It would be this thing that people would use as a bridge to be able to keep them into a strong, healthy state. I started looking at the literature on it and became absolutely fascinated beyond almost every other superfood that I was in before, like wheatgrass and cacao and goji berries. Suddenly mushrooms were just, wow. Until I then realized you could also find them in the woods here in Canada. So it became this really cool rite of passage to actually then go into the woods by myself, just with the help of YouTube videos and mushroom hunting books, and try to identify what's reishi, what's shaga, what's lion's mane, what's turkey tail, and try to find these mushrooms and just figure out how to extract them and break them down. And I noticed the biggest skyrocket in just how I felt every day from taking mushrooms.
So just a disclaimer, do not go out and just randomly pick mushrooms and eat them, because there are poisonous mushrooms that can kill you. So yes, make sure you know what you're doing.
Absolutely.
Or you have someone who knows what they're doing, showing you and teaching you.
Absolutely.
Right? And I think the rule is, like, if it grows in the ground, it can be poisonous, but on trees, it's
exactly not poisonous. You got it. Yeah, tree mushrooms are very safe. So being able to go look for reishi and shaga is a super safe activity because they grow on trees. Almost every mushroom that grows on trees is not only just not toxic, it's actually usually medicinal. It usually has triterpenes, beta glucans, polysaccharides, a lot of different elements that can heal the body. So thankfully, the two mushrooms I started with were extremely easy to identify. Like, reishi is clearly reishi when you see it. It's bright, beautiful.
I recently got
red.
A gift for a good friend of mine. He was just telling me how much he loved to, like, see these people with these big necklaces. He calls them the chempel, like the chest temple. And I went and I harvested this massive reishi.
Yeah.
And I dried it and I tied it into a necklace. And I told him, like, wear it for a week. Set your intention to make a tea and drink it. And you're going to become superhuman. Like,
did he?
Super Mario. He's working on it. Yeah. He's working on it.
He's still drying it out on his chest.
Yeah. No, it's there. It's waiting. Yeah. I'm going to drink it with him.
Yeah.
But yes. Yeah, so anyways.
To your point as well, every mushroom is edible, but some only once.
Okay.
Remember that. So be very conscientious. This is something that we teach mushroom hunting workshops as well in the company. And this is something we have to really make clear to people is it seems like a free-for-all when you go in the woods because there's so many mushrooms. And we get pictures every single day on Instagram of people trying to identify. And the reality is this, in most countries around the world where mushroom hunting is prevalent, such as like in North America, Sweden, Finland, France, Italy, during certain times of the year, there's really only so many mushrooms that are edible. It's not like hundreds are edible. It's actually really when you go into the woods, you're really only looking for three or four mushrooms at that time. Like right now we have hedgehog mushroom, we have chanterelle. Those two are the main prevalent ones, in lobster mushroom. You're only looking for three mushrooms. And the great thing with mushrooms that are culinary, that the ones at least we advocate eating, they're always ones that are so specifically clearly that mushroom. Like we're talking bright yellow, and the way you can start to identify how the volvo works. These are things that we teach so you can understand right away. Like when you go in the woods, you know what you're looking for. It's not like it's a free-for-all, put everything in the basket. It's really a very carefully practiced art. But an art that makes you really unlock a childlike part of yourself. And that's what I think I love the most about bringing people in the woods. It's an adult treasure hunt. It's so fun bringing in a basket and you see, you know, lawyers, boxers, DJs, we bring everyone into the woods and you see people on their hands and knees picking up a mushroom and looking at the coloration. And you're seeing this like innocence and curiosity for nature come back.
It's amazing. And they're so unique and different. Even I see my own kids like, oh, look at these mushrooms. Like, most of them, we have no idea what they are, but it's just fun to find them and like, see like, wow, like we're bright red or yellow or
right.
Growing off a tree or the reishi. And yeah, it's a pretty amazing experience for sure.
It really is. Yeah. Unlock something.
Yeah. So this passion for hunting somehow turned into a business. How did that come to be? Yeah.
So very similar to what you're saying with Tim is I knew very early on I wanted to be a health entrepreneur. I knew about 19, 20, 18 years old, I knew I wanted to create a business that I could travel the world doing that would also be giving back to people with their health. So I was trying to figure out really what product or what specific area within health, because it's so vast, could I actually narrow in on? And it took me about 5 years of actually just being very much into mushrooms and superfoods before I really got the confidence and the balls to actually just launch a business and try it. I'd been working with so many amazing companies in the space, but I kept feeling like I need to know a little more before I can do it, until one day I just thought, I'm going to be 30 before I do this, and it's been 10 years, so I might as well just try it.
There's always that paralysis in entrepreneurship. It's like, I need to know just a little bit more. And some of it's your own fear of, like, not being adequate enough or an expert. You see these, like, Paul Stamets guys, and like, oh, I need to be closer to him to have any validation, but which is not the case. A lot of the times, it's like, yeah, put out a product, and then you're going to have to market test it, see what people are getting feedback, and, like, start having some confidence in yourself, like, exactly what Tim said.
Yeah.
And yeah, like 10 years is a long time. And I remember even myself, like, wanting to launch businesses. You're like just preparing forever. Next thing you know,
item,
10 years go by and it's like you still haven't put something out yet.
Yeah.
So your first product was?
The Shaga Root Beer Elixir. So my first product, I decided it was mushrooms. And then I wanted to figure out, well, what's missing on the market that I, as a fanatical buyer of every mushroom product that's on the health food store shelf, what would I want that I don't see people doing? And the answer was quite obvious to me right off the bat, is sustainable shaga. I wasn't able to find a company really doing sustainably harvested shaga. It was very hard to find tinctures that were extracting mushrooms in high quality alcohol versus just ethanol, which is extremely toxic to the body in large doses, which are recommended on the label. So I was starting to say, like, well, why aren't they extracting higher quality stuff? Why aren't they mixing with other herbs to make it taste good? So it started becoming a few things like, what's a product that would geek me out? And I was like, I want shaga that's harvested in Canada. It's not coming from somewhere in Europe far away when it grows here. I want it harvested sustainably here. And I want it extracted in a way that makes it taste good so I can enjoy taking it every day. So I started looking up old alchemical recipes for I grew up literally loving like Dr. Pepper and root beer and all these different flavors of sodas. And I gave those up when I was 20. So it's been 5 years of not drinking that stuff. I thought they must be based on something originally. So I started looking up the origins of root beer, which is my favorite. And it turns out root beer is actually a 16th century tonic that was really called root tea. And it existed in several different continents in different variations, but always kind of around the same idea. Sassafras or sarsaparilla as the main ingredient.
Is that also the base for MDMA?
Sassafras, yes. Sassafras is now illegal by the FDA. So you can't use sassafras because it does actually release certain, let's call it sapiens for the brain to see a different color spectrum of reality. So we chose sarsaparilla naturally. So sarsaparilla is the forerunner that goes alongside sassafras that has a very similar flavor. But sassafras is the original ingredient in root beer or sarsaparilla. So we kind of took a composite of the flavors of India, how India creates their own version of root beer that uses sarsaparilla as a root that grows there, a version in Mexico that use things like burdock roots, and mix it with a Canadian classic. Like, to me, shaga is so Canadian. It's like we have such beautiful birch forests, but it's never been used in root beer, but I wanted to combine it all together and make an elixir that made health fun, and it made it where you could drink a mushroom like shaga that some people really don't like the flavor of. It's just very like earthy.
I love it.
I love it as well. For the people who didn't love it, I wanted to make something where they could take it and get such a high dose and enjoy the experience of it. So then we came to market with it, and it was super small scale. And we were just, you know, doing farmers markets. We were doing consciousness events like what you were doing and just building it up and getting it out there.
Mm-hmm. So sustainably harvesting shaga means what? Going out into the forest, taking a little bit from a tree. So some questions around that.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah.
When a tree starts having shaga, which is like almost like a parasitic host or something like that?
Yeah, it's actually symbiotic. It actually doesn't rob from the tree or destroy it or kill it.
Does it mean the tree is in the process of dying when it starts growing the shaga, or not
necessarily? It could literally be a scrape, a wound that the mycelium starts to form in that scrape or wound, but there's no evidence that actually links that it's actually killing the tree or hurting it.
And then by sustainably harvesting, are you taking all the shaga out or you're leaving some so it will grow back? How does that work exactly?
So there's two parts of sustainable harvesting, because there's one part that has to be always acknowledged with it is, first off, clear cutting goes on at such a rate that's destroying far more forest filled with shaga than hunters, you know, that are doing it for companies. So that's the first thing. Is one of our companies that we work with is in upstate New York, and they do shaga where they actually go into forest before they're logged and clear all the medicinal mushrooms from it. So that way they're not just rotting there, but meanwhile they provide magic and health benefits to so many people. So that's one way of kind of looking at it. The second way, if you are going to go in the woods and harvest, shaga is only growing on approximately 1 in every 1,000 birch trees, so it's quite rare.
Wow.
It's quite rare. So when you go in the forest and you find shaga, the best thing to do is to not harvest the entire piece. Leave about 15 to 10% still on the tree, and you never dig into the tree. Because that growth will actually come back within 5 to 10 years. You'll start to have a piece form that you could harvest again. And then it leaves it for future generations.
And so with this boom in the interest in chaga, which I don't know how big it is, but I know a few years ago I started getting into it. So then I started seeing it more, because once your brain starts looking for something, you see it everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there any risk of it being over-harvested, or it's you know, are you having more trouble finding it? Or I guess you go into remote areas, but is there any sort of risk of, you know, depleting this sort of resource?
I think not entirely to the point where it go extinct, but, and there actually have been mushrooms in history that have gone extinct, right? There's a certain agaricae. Paul Stamets actually talks about a few different mushrooms that are very, very impossible to find in the old growth forest because they've been so clear cut. So I think the biggest risk that we actually run with something like chaga is actually not really from companies. It's actually from the logging practices that go on. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more, when you look at acreage wise, how much is clear cut versus, you know, even if you send hundreds of people in the woods to go find chaga, how much is actually being clear cut every single day? That's actually the concept. We're trying to bridge that in Canada right now and working with companies so we can get in the forest before they do this, because it's hard to stop them from doing it, but at least let's learn some of the medicines that are there and harvest them before that's, you know, clear cut.
And so I guess is chaga your like top of the medicinal mushroom chart for you? Or
it is for a few reasons, one of which is chaga. When you look at reishi and lion's mane, for instance, have nerve growth factor, so it actually rebuilds the brain and helps the brain with memory, focus, concentration.
And tastes good too.
And tastes awesome. You can cook it tastes like literally bomb. Every mushroom also has a superpower, but the thing with chaga would be like, I don't know what Avenger would be the one. I'm trying to think of like which Avenger's the best, but chaga has the widest array of mineral composite of any of the mushrooms, as well as antioxidant richness. When you look at an ORAC scale of what chaga has, chaga's got the highest dosages even over raw cacao. So you look at something that has really high antioxidant properties, really high mineral properties, and also really high enzymatic properties. These are enzymes like betulinic acid, beta glucans. These are things that arm your white blood cells to actually fight off invaders in the system.
So it's good for boosting immunity, or yeah, if people are already sick, it can help them.
It can help them resist any further infection. Chaga is extremely antibacterial, you can't claim it's antivirus, but let's just say it helps you protect yourself against a high viral load, which then ends up making you susceptible to viruses. But the thing that's special about chaga is not only does it provide some deep medicines that really work on layers like the liver and helps with things like your skin, it also boosts you up with the minerals that a lot of people are very deficient in, like magnesium. 80% of the U.S. population is severely deficient in magnesium.
They should all be
floating. With floating?
They should all be floating. It's magnesium. So anyways, just try and plug my studio there.
We can put some chaga into the float tank too, and then like they absorb it.
That would be awesome. Yeah, I wonder how that would work. Maybe just a shot before of this ginger tea. Just like,
we can arrange that.
Okay. Cool.
The thing, obviously, though, like I think that most people know when they start drinking chaga, you've probably noticed this too, is sure, it's good for the immune system, it's amazing for the skin, but the thing that most people over the last 4 years of business that have told me through taking chaga consistently is it really nourishes the pineal gland, the gland in the brain that really helps you focus, concentration, and awareness. So when I drink chaga, the reason I personally love it is the state of awareness it puts me in. It's almost like your peripheral vision increases. You feel like you just have more of a sense of what's going on around you. It creates more clarity of thought. So people who suffer with brain fog, chaga is the number one go-to, as well as lion's mane. So I think chaga is just an overall well-rounded food, probably the most well-rounded food I've ever come across in superfoods. That's why I really love it. And I think it's a really interesting growth pattern it has, where it grows on the side of a tree for 30, 40, 50 years. When we look at most of our diet, our foods are grown in a season. A tomato grows in a season. A cucumber grows in a season. A lot of the superfoods only grow in a season, a berry. A mushroom that grows on the side of a tree, it collects the intelligence of not only the soil of that forest, which is so diverse and so rich, collects the properties from the tree as well as sunlight for all of those years, really collects a certain type of wisdom and mineral capacity that's just unmatched.
Wow, that's an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah.
So just a couple more questions going back to the business side of it.
Yeah.
You know, my good friend Robbie's sitting over here listening in. He's really all about like product testing and like really doing a lot of analytics and like testing the market and trying to find out what people want. Right. I feel like this one, you sort of went intuitively and said, hey, I'm going to make this product that I would really want.
Yeah.
How was that received? You know, because it's a really niche, different product that no one's ever heard about. How was it received, and like how have you like evolved since you launched it?
Yeah.
You know, as a startup, you know, with a very specific different product, and how has the success been?
Well, here's what happened for me. I realized really early on, I was about 6 to 8 months in Toronto working on the business, doing farmers markets, doing events. And I started just recognizing that this product was just, mushrooms are too early still. This is 5 years ago, consider. 5 years ago, I realized the market's not hot for medicinal mushrooms here. So I had always wanted to go to Los Angeles. It'd always been my dream to live in California. So I went down to California and I did my own version of market testing. I went to all the health food stores. I went to all the health food restaurants and realized mushrooms were just at that point of peaking. Mm. Brands like Four Sigmatic that I worked with very closely, like older brothers in the industry, I worked with them and I realized quickly, people get it here. There's an understanding of medicinal mushrooms. So I made a pivotal decision very early on in my business that was very tough for me at first because I really didn't have a support structure to make it work, but I just had to really, truly pack the car and drive my ass to Los Angeles and just figure it out.
Trust your instincts.
That's it. And I went down to LA. I sold my apartment in Toronto. I got rid of all of my stuff. I decided, you know what? I'm going to take a shot at it. Worst that happens, I come back and I take up my old life. And I drove to Los Angeles. I got a place there. I found the commercial kitchen. I started preparing the product. I brought it into the market and I got...
Where were you getting your chaga from? Were you shipping it from
Canada? I'm shipping it from Canada.
Cool.
So we were harvesting here. We had a harvester out in Nova Scotia and, you know, family run. So we're harvesting as much chaga as we can. I'm shipping it down to LA and then I got a major break and it was amazing. And I really do feel like this major break came from just putting it all on the line and knowing I'll lose it all. I don't care. I'm going to try to make this happen. And I got into Cafe Gratitude within like the first month of being in LA.
I love that place.
I got on the menu and it was a best-selling drink and 5 different drinks over 3 years.
Wow.
Every time we were put in a drink, whether it was a mushroom matcha, a chaga root beer, a smoothie, it was the best-selling drink across 6 different restaurants in LA. And if people have ever been to LA and been, Cafe Gratitude is the ultimate vegan health food restaurant in the world.
I love it. Yeah, yeah. I think I actually had your drink when I was there last because I saw it on the menu.
Yeah.
Yeah, really cool.
And then the thing I did with that was I just leveraged it. I went to Air One, which is the prevalent health food market in Los Angeles, and I got into the 5 locations there. And then I went to Equinox Gyms and got into all the Earth Bars. So that's the thing with entrepreneurship. It's leveraging your past win and using it and really showing there's credibility here. Like, I've done it.
Yeah, that's really important. Like, once you have sort of a big win, it's like using that to then...
The momentum of it. Keep going.
Yeah, and then... You know, other people will see that, like, oh, you're in Cafe Gratitude. It automatically gives us credibility.
It's a validation.
Yeah. So you're focusing on, like, a food service application, so not a retail product with those stores. You're giving them the bottle, but they're more putting it into drinks.
They're putting it into recipes, putting it into drinks. Cool.
And then was there any, like, what was your biggest challenge then as an entrepreneur launching a niche product? Was there any, like, supply issues or?
Certainly supply issues. Yeah, I was really trying to navigate a lot of different things on my own.
I can't imagine what that'd be like.
It's like you're getting, you have 5 restaurants that are high volume ordering from you every single week. I was literally just locked in a kitchen, just preparing it and just trying to figure out all the different things I had to get, like the right bank accounts. What type of insurance do I need? It was like literally just all the stuff I had to fit it into like a couple weeks and make it work, keep up with demand. And you know, the real challenge was actually realizing the model that I really wanted to adopt that was going to allow me more time freedom to go travel the world was actually doing more e-commerce and hiring and bringing more people in. So I started developing a team. So there were certainly like the transitional shifts I had to make, knowing that if I really want to start traveling, it'd be great if I could actually have more of an online product that can be produced anywhere. It doesn't just have to be like as close as I can to that restaurant.
Yeah. And how difficult is it to produce and scale? It seems like something like this is very like specific that you want to make sure it's done. I would assume in smaller batches, like very like precise.
Yes,
is it something that's scalable that you can make a lot without losing the quality, or is that probably a challenge you've I'm trying to figure out?
You know what? I've been very happy with the growth. It's not growth that's like, you know, in the first year it was like 0 to 100 very quick. But since then it's been more sustained growth because it really is like, what type of life do I want to live? Mm-hmm. And I started realizing that really quickly. Like I had pressures from different other entrepreneur friends, like you should get investors, you should really push it. And I started getting to the point where I'm like, I like what we got though. Like I feel like we can give the client the best product possible in the market because we have our hands on everything from the harvesting all the way to the shipping and delivery. So we can really add those really beautiful touches to it. So I feel like specifically some products maybe aren't meant to scale to the highest degree. There's other products we have coming up that will be more scalable with mushrooms that are a little easier than like having to wild harvest a specific mushroom like reishi, where you can actually do biodynamic farming of that. Mm-hmm. That's another option. But for this product, I'm quite happy with where it's at.
How many products do you have now? Is it still the main single SKU?
We have the chaga root beer elixir. We have the tea. We have a line of soaps we've created using like essential oils, cold process with chaga. And then we're working on a few tinctures and different things right now.
Nice. So I guess what's next for Shane and Black Magic? I know you're dabbling a bit into
some other worlds.
Some other worlds, like the YouTube sort of educational videos and experiential stuff. What excites you?
Yeah.
Both in the mushroom world and personally.
Well, the formulations certainly excite me. There's a lot of other products I've wanted to see on the market. Like, I won't say them all necessarily, but I'll put it this way. There's a lot of products on the market that they don't taste good. And they're like, why is this product not taste great? Because to me, health is fun. And I think that it should be, like, that's why we did root beer with Shaga. Like, let's make something that's nostalgic, something from people's past that they really enjoyed. So there's infinite amount of products that are on the market that are seen as like bad, naughty foods, don't eat those, that I feel could be reconfigured with the right herbs and superfoods.
Make them super healthy.
Exactly. Yeah. And bring people into this. And that's been the most rewarding part of this, is seeing, we have, you know, parents giving this to their kids, getting their kids to drink Shaga, all the way to grandparents who are 80 years old, who would never pick up a wheatgrass shot or a juice, who are drinking it like, this is great, I like this. So awesome. that's what I want to bridge. And there's a lot of cool products that we can start to go into. So I'm deep in formulation land, coming up with some new magical things.
Awesome. I love it. So if people want to try your product or check out your website, where can they get a hold of you?
So blackmagicalchemy.com. They can look it up. We have the website. We ship literally anywhere in the world. If you're in Israel, Sweden, Switzerland, you name it, we'll ship there. As well as you could find us in Los Angeles. We're in a lot of stores there, as well as in Toronto. A lot of restaurants and health food restaurants and stores and such.
And what about social media handles? Any?
Same thing. At Black Magic Alchemy. And if you check out my YouTube channel, Shane Tyler Milson, we share a lot of the mushroom hunting side. So you can learn the basics and the understandings of how to mushroom hunt, or what to do after you've harvested things like Shaga or Reishi. How do you extract it?
Awesome. Yeah, that I was all into those videos in the first few years trying to figure out, like, now what do I do?
yeah, I found it. Like, what do I do with the 5 pounds?
Yeah, exactly. So check out Shane's stuff. Check out his YouTube channel. Lots of other amazing videos and content, mushroom and non-mushroom related as
exactly,
well.
Exactly, yeah.
Great guy. Support him. Try his stuff. It's a great product. I'm drinking it right now. And thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thanks for subscribing and all the support. Love you guys so much. And I'll hope to see you soon. Thanks again, Shane. Love you, brother.
Thank you, brother.
Looking forward to this weekend, hanging out.
Absolutely. Cool.